Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Pitton.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, let's begin with the update on the COVID numbers. Today, the total number of COVID-19 cases in Malaysia exceeded the 4,000 mark. Now, 156 new cases were reported today, bringing the total to 4,119 cases. There were also two new deaths from COVID-19 today, bringing the death toll to 65. Now, yesterday, we read news of a lockdown that was announced on two buildings in Jalan Masjid India after 19 COVID-positive cases were detected on the premises. Now, this enhanced MCO affects approximately 6,000 people, 97% of which are migrants. Now, the question of their welfare has been raised, especially after Defence Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob announced last week that all foreign embassies were responsible for distributing aid to their citizens here. What do you make of this, Sharad?
Yeah, it's a very interesting issue around the question of responsibility. Now, you know, yes, when you do a lockdown, whose responsibility is it? We had in the cases in Simpang Ringgam. The government took on the responsibility when they closed off those villages, affecting some 3,000 people, to say, well, they would be, taking charge of their provisions and basic necessities. We see this around the world, Indonesia as well. A real question around whether the government of the day could, in fact, effect a lockdown without simultaneously taking on the burden of making basic provisions to their citizens.
So, providing for
that, I think, is the crux of the matter. Mm. But it's been resolved, hasn't it? This issue of the MCO, EMCO in Masjid India.
That's right. So the KL Mayor, Nur Hisham Dahlan, has come out to pledge that food will be provided for the residents in both buildings. I mean, I think the idea is that a lot of the migrants in this area are now at a loss because they do not have a source of income. We're talking about 10 to 15 people sharing one 800 square feet unit. And that's a very, a lot of people in a very small space. And we also have to think about, you know, the strategies of containment. If you're having, that number of people in such a small space, how are you going to be able to observe, social distancing?
Yeah, and also, how would the various foreign missions actually have access to them? And, this just multiplies different routes in terms of supply. But I think also, Melissa, away from this particular Masjid India case, the issue of foreign workers was raised very early on in the MCO period and, in fact, in the COVID crisis about their ability to access healthcare at an affordable price that would be an incentive for them to come out, especially those who are undocumented. Mm. So, in the crisis like this, you really don't want to be putting up barriers or creating disincentives for people to come forward. And I think largely it seems like our policymakers have gotten it right in terms of making sure that everybody sees the value of coming forward and getting tested.
One thing that's come up from this, Sharad, that I think kind of warms my heart is seeing how these migrant workers, because they live in a community, are helping each other. They're turning to each other for resources, pooling money together to buy provisions and sharing, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And sometimes, I think especially advocates are more concerned about the foreign worker population, which is kind of the underclass of Malaysia, tend not to talk about the positive stories of how they themselves use their networks to strengthen their communities in terms of responding to crises like this. And I see that in my neighbourhood as well, Melissa, people coming together, young men coming together to network and make sure they're safe and also have the food and such. Mm. The question is, for how long can they do it in the absence of an income? So they can do it for a couple of weeks, but if this MCO stretches on, we'll see the consequences, I think, emerging.
All right. Well, in other news, we have the Malaysian Employers Federation warning of serious implications on the economy if employers were not allowed to retrench workers. Now, this, of course, comes after MTUC, or Malaysian Trades Union Congress, proposed yesterday that the government introduce an emergency regulation that would at least for a certain period of time, make it illegal to lay off workers.
Yeah, so Melissa, we come back to, you know, the objectives of, you know, the Pihatin package, one and plus, as well as other kind of policy initiatives. I mean, what is it that we want to do at this point in time? There is the crisis, there is the MCO, and then, of course, there is the beyond the MCO, the recession that's expected to be a global one, and how to be resilient in that. So the question is, should policymakers, in wanting to say to protect workers, which I think is very important to do, then tie the hands of businesses to recalibrate their business models, to recalibrate their operations? And in doing so, will they actually create a problem down the line? And that is, I think, something the MEF, I think, is pointing to.
Well, OK, so the assumption is that, you know, if you have wage subsidies, if you have kind of, you know, protection for workers from losing their jobs, the idea is to preserve the potential productivity that can be kick-started once this has passed. The idea is that perhaps the recovery period is, you know, within 3 to 6 months. However, according to economists, we're looking at a much longer period of a depressed economy. So the question is, how long can these businesses survive without having to lay off workers? Of course, that's always, you know, a terrible scenario to be faced with, but to not be able to tie, as you said, Chira, to tie the hands of businesses, what implications then, what unforeseen consequences will we have to deal with down the road?
Yeah, and Melissa, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk, has been for the last decade, I think, about universal basic income and all these other strategies of providing social safety nets for individuals.
Are you a proponent of UBI?
I think, you know, having spoken to some chief, theorists around the universal basic income, I can see the value, and the value is, you know, both social as well as political. When people are not hungry, when people are not insecure, they tend to behave in much more rational ways, tend not to be driven by populism or fascism and some of the more negative kinds of political responses that we see coming around the world, I mean, including Europe. So, yeah, universal basic income, a conversation that we need to have. Safety social nets, again, you know, protecting our national healthcare system from being privatized to the extent that people lose access to quality healthcare. All these things, I think, need to be part of the conversation.
That's right. Well, moving on to other news, we have comments from farmers and fishermen reporting that they are no longer forced to throw away their produce due to problems in transporting it to markets. In fact, the problems in the supply chain for vegetables and fish have vastly improved and are no longer as chaotic as in the early stages of the MCO. However, farmers are now more concerned about waning sales and the low prices of vegetables. According to them, the weather has been good, which has led to a bountiful harvest. However, because many sales channels have closed due to the MCO, this has adversely affected vegetable prices.
It's a positive story in many ways, Melissa, because the MCO, again, one of those extraordinary moments when, you know, all the different parts need to kind of work together.
Yes, teething problems have been
there
resolved.
There were teething problems, now they've been resolved. That's a great story to tell.
Yes.
The other side, well, maybe we all should be eating more vegetables, you know, picking up the slack. If there's a bountiful harvest, maybe this is the time. And also, remember, we shouldn't be wasting food. Sharing it with your neighbours, always a good practice. I've started to share things with my neighbours, something I didn't do in the past, so I'm very happy.
That's lovely.
In many ways.
Sharing it with neighbours
is
a great idea.
Yeah, that's
idea.
What we should be all doing.
Okay, I look forward to receiving my share of
whatever
you cooked
harvest,
for lunch.
Yes.
I just a quick mention here, I saw a really positive story. Village Grocer, the grocery chain, has decided to donate food to Zoo Negara. So we're thinking about, you know, people not having enough to eat, but also animals in Zoo Negara suffering because they are lacking, I guess, the ticket sales that was once driving the revenue for Bank Negara. So meat close to expiration.
For the National Zoo. Might need some food as well, but okay.
That's right. So a heartwarming story there. But after this, we're going to take a look at something not so heartwarming. Racial hate speech in Malaysia, what that looks like in a time of COVID. So stay tuned to consider this.